Says Dorothy Redding. Today's date is June 1st, 1973. The time is 7 p.m. I will be interviewing Mr. Arthur E. Spencer of East Goodrich Road, Otter Lake, Michigan. Topic to be discussed is history and stories about Indian Dave.
As you see me snap my head. Good evening, Mrs. Redding. Now, I have here a short history of Indian Dave that I used with this photograph that was given to me by a man in Mayville to have reproduced, so that and we use it sort of as to advertise our little rock shop. But on the back of it, on some of them, is this short history of Indian Dave. The Indian was a boy of 15 at the signing of the 1819 Treaty of Saginaw, where General Cass won the cession of most of the Lower Peninsula from Kalamazoo to Thunder Bay. When my mother was a girl of 10 in the 90s, he and his son John were often seen walking on the roads, as they did for more than half a century when the country was new, visiting their visitors and collecting meals and lodging, mostly in barns, from the intruding whites, a form of rent for the use of this land that they knew had always belonged to their people. With no record of having harmed anyone, they would hardly qualify for the title of savage. Dave was a living legend long before his death in this luxury apartment that is shown on the face of the card. Some of the grandpas and the grandmas of today have childhood recollections and personal acquaintance or first-hand knowledge of incidents, and I have tried to use this picture by having it reproduced in local newspapers and including with it a request for stories or an opportunity to hear stories concerning Indian Dave, and I have collected a few, but very few. Some of these we will, during this the course of the evening, disclose. The postcard which I referred to, the picturing Indian Dave standing before a tent made of bark and possibly canvas or skins, was one that came to my attention when I was hunting for a history of Tuscola County, and the gentleman in Mayville gave me the card, and then I inserted the had the card reproduced in the Millington Herald, and under it we had a caption: anyone with any recollections of this picture, please send the news to Ed Spencer, Otter Lake, or leave it to Jim Wilson at the Herald. And I got this letter from a Mrs. Marguerite Williamson Hollister. And I will read the letter. Dear Sir, I recognize the picture published in the Millington Herald. In fact, I'm almost positive that my father, Jacob Franklin Williamson, of Vassar, in that period of time, a photographer, took it. He, Indian Dave, was a very frequent caller and traded many times with my folks. Many are the true stories told us children. Being one of the younger members of this large family, my knowledge of this man and his son John was told by my folks and the older members of the family who knew him personally. You could make contact with several of my sisters and get first-hand information. John was dead, I believe. She believed that John was dead at the time she knew, but John did outlive his father. This, I am now talking with Mrs. Redding as a, and not reading from the letter. I have later determined that John was alive at the death of his father. So the stories about Indian Dave, now reading from the letter, were just as real to us younger ones as we'd been, as if we'd been there. My folks lived just in the edge of the village of Vassar. Our home was nearly surrounded by woods, which bordered the railroad property, the Pier Marquette. This special location was attractive to the Indian as he traveled a great deal. He was unafraid and made very good friends of my family. My oldest brother, Pierce, a natural-born naturalist and sportsman, was the only one to whom this Indian would confide his medicinal secrets. Many times on a visit, he found one or several of the children sick. He'd call Pierre aside. He called my brother Pierre instead of Pierce, indicating some French leaning. He'd call Pierre aside and take him to the woods for some particular roots, berries, or bark. He then told him how to prepare them and the dosage. "Me make them well, heap soon," he'd tell him. He was always right, too, it seemed. He seemed more sure of himself with Pierre, my brother. My brother always hunted and trapped and spent much time in the woods camping also. The woods have been known to most people as Slatter's Woods, and now are the site of some very exclusive homes. There are... In closing, let me say each of us children of the late Jacob Williamson have one of the same cards and are identical to the one in the paper. This is the reason I'm pretty sure he made them. For a time, when times were especially hard, he made postcards and traveled many places in Michigan doing this work. This is a thrill to see the picture printed, and I went and got mine from my collection right away. Yours truly, Marguerite it is, Williamson Hollister. The date of that was about June of 1970. There appeared in the Carroll Tuscola Advertiser an article some years ago concerning the dispute between Vassar and Carroll over the location of the county seat. And in the article there was a good deal of historical information that was not concerned with Indian Dave. But it seems that at a crucial point in this transfer of the records and of the, in fact, the government of the county of Tuscola, Indian Dave did perform a quite important act or part of, and that was after the proposal to change the county seat from that to Carroll, the officers being mostly loyal to Vassar, or the ones with the records, the treasurer and the secretary, they had to do a little bit of conniving, Watergating, you might say. And in this deal, a fellow by the name of Peter Bush involved Indian Dave and his canoe. And Peter Bush got the records, and Indian Dave helped paddle up the stream from Vassar to Carroll during the nighttime with all of the records of the county, and thus changed the actual county seat from Vassar to Carroll. And our central character had a most important part in the actual conversion of Vassar, or Carroll, to become the true county seat, which it still is today. End of report there. Here is still another Tuscola County Advertiser account, the date of which I do not have. And this simply titled Indian Dave, and as reads as follows. The Indian Dave referred to earlier was best known and liked Indian in Tuscola County. Registered as David Stocker, he was born OSH-DON-QUIT and claimed to be the chief of the Tuscola family, although he was never recognized as such by the Chippewas. He received his power from his father, Chief Nipmuc, and was directly descended from Chief Pontiac himself. Indian Dave was born around 1801 and died in 1909. This account I am here interposing what I consider to be better knowledge, that he died May 26, 1909, near Guilford. And now back to quoting the at the age of 106 years, and this account here says 109. I prefer to believe the 106. Now, back to quoting the Tuscola Advertiser. Indian Dave's only permanent home was a wooden shack which stood on the banks of the Cass, a mile south of Carroll, but he preferred to wander throughout the county, camping in a type of portable teepee. He was always invited to share meals with many families in the county, whenever he happened to be in their particular community. He was a great favorite of all the children and generally gave the children some trinket as repayment for his handouts. As a young brave, Indian Dave was present at the signing of the Treaty of Saginaw in 1819, which was negotiated by General Lewis Cass. And that ends that report. Now we will quote from the Carroll Advertiser of June 4, 1909. And Indian Dave, May 26, 1909. And this, the heading on this story reads, Indian Centenarian. Indian Dave passed away in his wigwam in Guilford. In a rude wigwam built of bark, hides, and so forth, in Guilford Township, Dave's, as he was known throughout this portion of the state, passed to the happy hunting grounds at the unheard of age of 106 years. He had been quite an active and strong until last fall, when he began gradually to fail. Many of his acquaintances, fearing he would not survive the winter, in fact, it was reported a short time ago that the end had come, but nearby friends looked after his needs and comforts and nursed the aged brave through a strenuous siege. A few days preceding his death, the old Indian asked that a minister come to see him, and on Sunday after church Baptist minister, after Baptist services, the minister and 50 others went to the hut, sang gospel songs, and prayed at his bedside, and added a word of comfort and encouragement to the eldest man in the community. Supervisor Moses Hill, assisted by neighbors and friends, ministered as far as possible to the aged and lonely man's comfort. And that's the end of the obituary that I found in the June 4th, 1909 Carroll Advertiser. Having divulged all the stolen materials that are on paper, I will give you the stolen ones that I have in mind. Not recollections, but recollections of recollections, which are, of course, not admissible as evidence in the court. However, my grandmother, Etta Rexrue, lived at the corner of Barnes and North Lake Road on what would be the southwest corner of the section, or the northwest, the land on the northeast of the actual intersection. And there's an old greening tree there that was in their orchard, still producing greening apples every year. I never recall that it ever missed a year producing a crop. But while they lived there, and during the time when my mother was growing up, between the age of 10 and or 9 and 12 perhaps, there were many visits by the old gentleman, Dave, Indian Dave. And grandmother, I remember her telling me this, that quite often Dave would go down to Cedar Lake in the wintertime and spear a large Great Northern pike and bring it up, and he'd just come up to the door and knock, and she, of course, wouldn't probably see him coming, and she'd open the door, and there he'd be with the big fish, and he'd just plop it on the floor and say, "Me want bread." And he'd hold up two fingers. And she, if she didn't happen to have bread at the time, well, she'd tell him that she didn't have the bread or couldn't spare it. And he'd say, "Me wait." And he'd edge by her and go in and lay down by the stove. And if he possibly could, if Grandpa was there, he'd can go to the barn. And he'd wait until Grandma baked him a couple of loaves of bread. And, of course, it took several hours to accomplish, but he was a patient man. Mother one time tells the story that she had been down to my Uncle Grant's about a half a mile to the east on Barnes Road while they were at the lodge meeting, and she would babysit for their children, which were much younger than she. And this would have probably happened while she was 10 or 12, and would have been 94, 95, 96, along in there. She came home one evening after having babysit, sat for the Uncle Grant, and as she approached the shortcut through the field to the house, which sort of ran alongside the barn, she heard singing and hollering in the barn, and so she was a little frightened to go through the shortcut, and so went on down the Barnes Road to the North Lake Road and up the North Lake Road to the drive into the house. And when she got inside the house, Grandmother was awake, and Mother asked, "What's going on out the barn?" And Grandmother told her that Indian Dave had, and his son John had come and wanted to sleep in the barn, and grandfather had insisted that they give him all his their matches, and which they did, of course. And then he gave him permission to sleep in the barn. And but they were pretty well liquored up. It seems that I think, though this is my supposition, that there were characters in the country at that time that thought it was funny to get the Indians drunk and belittle them and make them seem rather offensive or obnoxious or one other thing. Perhaps that's my imagination. But in any case, they ingested the liquor themselves, probably, and so it's really their fault. They one other story that Al Jones tells, that's a friend of mine, but it comes later because Mr. Jones is only about 5 years my senior, and I am born in 1912, 3 years after Indian Dave's death, makes it more probable that it was the son of Indian Dave, John, who this story will apply to. And I know from other accounts, though I can't give any definite stories, that Indian John did follow the same practices that his father had for some half century, with a few variations. And one of them was that Al Jones received from Indian John a bow and arrow set. And whether he paid for it or not, or whether it was a part of the usual barter procedure, I don't know. But the first time that Mr. Jones tried to use the bow and arrow, it broke right in two. It was much too flimsy in it. And he, to this day, is very unhappy with his experience with Indian John's bow and arrow. This probably should conclude my reminiscences of the Indian Dave, but I have given Mrs. Redding a number of references which may provide further information. And I thank you all for your indulgence.
Thank you.